It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. Protests persist 2 weeks after a Minneapolis police officer killed George Floyd, a black man. This hour, we're talking about what black families face, certainly in the wake of Floyd's death, and also always, because racism is an everyday experience for people of color, and fighting racism and bias needs to be an everyday exercise for white people. We have several women with us today. They're civic leaders here in Wisconsin, and yes, they're also mothers. Laleda G is the founder of the Madison-based nonprofit organization Black Women Heal. Welcome, Laleda.
Thank you.
And also with us right now is Lisa Payton Kerr. She's the founder, CEO, and president of the Foundation of Black Women's Wellness. Lisa, thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning.
And we're asking this, how are you talking to your children about this historic moment? Have you had to worry that they wouldn't make it home one day? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Laleda, let's start here. What went through your mind when you learned of George Floyd's death?
It was just another string of atrocities that have been added to. But I also want to make sure that we focus on Breonna Taylor and other black women who have been killed by the police, because at this point in time, black people know that we're not safe when we're on the streets. We know we're not safe sometimes when we're stopped by the police, such as Sandra Bland. But now we're seeing that black women are not safe in their own homes, in their own beds. And that one hit me even more than George Floyd, because that is our greatest fear, that we've been killed in our churches now, we killed on the streets, and now police are coming in our homes and killing us. There's no safe place now.
And you're talking about Breonna Taylor, who was killed in her home in Kentucky by police.
Absolutely. And we're not saying her name enough. We're not talking about her story enough and the other black women who have been killed by police.
Lisa, what are your thoughts as you hear the names of George Floyd, as you hear about Breonna Taylor, as these stories are coming to the surface right now?
As Laleda said, and it's a joy to be on the phone with Laleda, but not so much around this topic, but good morning, Laleda, my sister.
Good morning with you, Lisa, as well.
Yes. You know, like Laleda said, this is just an ongoing experience of not only our country, and we need to acknowledge that this is a systemic problem in our country that's really part and parcel of our history, our racialized history of violence against black people, black bodies, black culture, black enterprise, black life, black breath. And we've been experiencing this for centuries, and that trauma is within us, it's within our bodies, it's within our memories, because George Floyd's death, Breonna Taylor's death, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, Michael Brown, you know, we can name the names, has been something we've dealt with in our community since we arrived on these shores under chattel slavery. As I was talking to someone about this yesterday, you know, we have stories going back to our grandparents' parents and their parents that we've been taught since we were babies, or at least children at the appropriate age, where our elders have had to sit us down and have to talk with us about safety and what it means and what it requires for us to be safe, and what we have to do in thinking about our every move to be safe when we exit our homes. You know, the cocoon of safety that our families build for us in our homes is not what we are experiencing in the outside world. And we are taught that at a young age so that we have a chance of living. And so when I heard this news, and as a mother, yes, of five children, three of whom are boys, young men now, and two who are daughters, and as Laleda said, equally unsafe in different ways, but equally unsafe in the world, our hearts were crushed. And, you know, it becomes a continuation of just a trauma that's in your soul and your body. And it put me down for, you know, a few days before you get activated to want to fight and to protest. It puts you on your back. And it's a continuation of a deep grief, as if it were your brother, your cousin, your uncle, your child, because we share in this collective experience and this pain. And so it has been emotionally difficult to witness over and over again. And your question becomes, when will it stop? When will it stop?
We're talking with Lisa Payton Kerr and also speaking with Laleda G. And Jackie Hunt is ready to join our conversation, also an advocate. Jacqueline Hunt is a clinical substance abuse counselor and a licensed professional counselor at Foster of Dane County. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Certainly, Jackie, you should have the same opportunity that Laleda and Lisa have, and that is, what is your response, what is your reaction to seeing so many names of Black people killed in the news right now?
One, just utter sadness, first, at the lives that were lost, but then secondary is anger. At all these Black lives and that have been cut way short through and simply because of racist acts. And it makes me angry that these individuals have their lives taken away way too soon. And, it's time for us to do something about that now. It's been time, but we've sat long enough, and I believe that now we have enough evidence. People can't experience anymore. We can't hold any more trauma in our bodies anymore. We're full, and it's got to come out. And so, if people are responding to it, I can imagine what, you know, how moms are feeling, how every mom, every Black mom is feeling, because there, but for the grace of God, it could have been one of our own, you know? And none of us want that to be our reality. At least I know I don't. So I'm angry enough to act now.
Jackie, what are you telling your children?
I tell my children to come home safe. You know, honestly, I just tell them, like, I know you believe you have rights, but because of where we live, a lot of their associates and peers are white. And I explain to them the difference between them and their peers. And I say at the end of the day, no matter what, just comply and come home. Get to the police station if you have to get there. If they have to arrest you, please be compliant. Just let me bring you home and we'll fight later. It's hard to say that to my young adults, simply just because of by virtue of the fact that they are young adults. And they are very impulsive because of the developmental stage that they're in right now. And when they're in a situation where they are being triggered by trauma, especially with the images of all those that have been shot or killed, that they have had to witness and see across social media divides, the response is fight, flight, or freeze.
Jackie, I want to jump in here because we're going to talk about this for the hour. Jackie Hunt, Lisa Payton Kerr, Laleda G, all with us now, sharing their experiences as people of color raising families and fighting discrimination. The conversation continues here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about the conversations Black parents have to have with their children as people demonstrate against police brutality and systemic racism. The number to call is 800-642-1234. We're wondering, do you worry about the messages your children are absorbing from the world around them? How do you teach and reinforce your child's sense of self-worth? And what do you tell your kids before they leave the house? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. And we just heard from Jackie Hunt, who is one of our guests, talking about how she is speaking with her children, her young adults who are trying to process this. And Jackie Hunt, one of our guests, also here with Lisa Payton Care and Lolita G. And Lolita, you also have adult children in their 20s. How often are you talking about issues of policing and safety with them as, you know, grownups?
We talk about it on a weekly, if not a daily basis, because honestly, every time, especially my son, who's 23, he's tall and he has dreads. Every time he walks out the house, I worry if he'll walk back in. And I tell you, that's not the way you want to parent your children, because you don't want to be afraid all the time and you don't want to put fear in their hearts. But you also know, like Jackie was saying, that if you don't teach them how to comply when they engage with the police, the next thing you know, you're planning a funeral. And that's really sad, because growing up here in Madison, I always felt like if I was a law-abiding citizen, I had no worries with engagement with police. After Sandra Bland was mysteriously found dead, and I don't believe she committed suicide, I began to understand that myself and my daughter had an equal risk when being stopped by the police. And we talk about it all the time. We process all the time. And the thing with us as Black people, we know that if this has happened with one Black person, even like Lisa was saying, if it's another city or state and you don't know them, you embody that, because you know, just like that happened to George Floyd or Breonna Taylor, it could happen to my son Christian, it could happen to my daughter Alexandra. And Breonna Taylor is just 1 year older than my daughter.
Lisa, you're a mother of five, including a teenager. How have your children reacted to what's happening right now?
Oh, my goodness. You know, my children are old enough now to have witnessed multiple police killings of unarmed Black people. So this isn't new to them. My oldest son is 20. My children are 27, 25, 22, 18, and 13. And again, three sons, two daughters. You know, it impacts each of them differently. But the thing that they all feel is grief, you know. And explaining to your 13-year-old son, particularly, who's just becoming a young man, who was just recently a boy, you know, a little boy, of how unsafe the world is and can be for men, for people who look like him. And to have the talk with him that I had to have with my older son earlier in life, what is really important for people to understand is that this doesn't just impact our kids. In terms of police, they're groomed at an early age. It starts in our schools. It starts in our public school systems when our children have to interface in a world that is often not welcoming and ready for them. Because I had to begin to have these conversations with my sons in elementary school because of how they were treated differently for the same behaviors that other little boys like them, you know. In disciplinary matters, and little boy behavior on playgrounds or in classrooms, how differentially treated they were, how they were sent out of the classroom to sit by themselves outside of the door, how they were sent to face the corner, how they were sent to detention. And I was having this conversation with a white mother, actually, the other night on State Street, where my daughters have painted a beautiful mural at the corner of State and Lake. In honor of Tony Robinson, the young teenager who was killed on State Street by a Madison police officer. And as they, you know, honor him and grieve the death of George Floyd and of Breonna Taylor and of Trayvon Martin and of Tamir Rice and all of these people through this piece that they're honoring Tony Robinson with, I stood in front of that mural with them, with a white mother of a biracial Black son who was trying to share with me her experiences of shock of how her son is policed in his behavior, has been policed in his behavior from kindergarten. And I had to tell her the exact same thing has happened to my son. Our sweet, well-loved, self-managing, self-disciplining, normal little boys who enter schools and are policed because they are viewed differently. They are viewed as behavioral challenges, and it starts there. And so there's a great deal of protection that we have to, an extra layer of protection as Black mothers, that we also always have to surround our children with, our boys and our girls. And for our girls, it happens in subtle ways. You know, my girls have been raised in Madison on two different stints of living here. And the psychological experience of Black girls who are often seen, feel unseen, invisible, and how their abilities are questioned. You know, it happens for them, and maybe you don't belong in this class. Maybe this is too, you know, too rigorous of an opportunity for you, or your voice doesn't matter, or your perspective isn't important. These are all forms of emotional violence that our kids contend with before they come into interactions with police, you know, and so it's all a part of a continuum. And it starts at a very young age of us having to sit our children down, our free children, you know, our free born Black children, where we have to talk to them about how to behave or move or situate your body so you're less threatening, or to draw less attention to yourself, what you need to do as you're driving, you know, please watch your speed. I tell my son every day when he leaves the house, please don't speed, please stop at every corner, please don't do anything that will attract negative attention by law enforcement. And as Leda said, there's always, and as Jackie said, the fear and the prayers, the fervent ardent prayers that we pray over our children every single time they walk out of the front door, begging God that they'll come back, begging God that they will come back. That is what we have to talk to our children about.
Yeah, Lisa Payton Care, her just now, also talking with Lalita G, and also with Jackie Hunt about what it's like in Black families raising Black children. Jackie, does this resonate with you, what you're hearing from your, you know, your fellow parents?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Even before my kids walk out the door, I'm already praying, you know, like when I only have two of my seven who actually still live at home. But the world doesn't see my babies the way I see them. They're still my babies. And so absolutely, when I know that, you know, especially during the day, my firstborns are family oriented. So, you know, like, sometimes they're out at night or whatever. Maybe, you know, my son may be driving or whatever. And, you know, he's not a big party person, not a big club person and things like that. So, the prayers I have for him are just a little, you know, like I pray for him, right, and pray for my daughter, right? But then I got these middle kids that are like young adults, under 30, but over 20, you know. And the world is their playground simply by virtue of the fact that developmentally they – are believing that they can do whatever they can repeat the message that's been sent to them is you can achieve anything. You can become anything you want to be. You know, if you have the ability to do this, you can, you know, like in that message, it's concrete in their brains. You know, it's not the gray area hasn't been filled in for them yet. You can do this, but only if hasn't filled in for them yet. Right. And so especially as they are out there interacting with their white counterparts, they are being exactly what 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds and 29-year-olds are supposed to be. They're enjoying life. They're working. They're going to school, you know, and they're having experiences. Now, these experiences are going to fill that gray area in for them. But my prayer for them is that no one, or if ever, they are in a situation where they are confronted by a police or anyone that they will remember, you know, what I've told them. No matter what, don't argue with people. You know, let people can say whatever they want out their mouth. Let them have it. You don't have to be right. Just be safe.
Jackie Hunt, Lisa Payton Kerr, and Lalaita G are all with us now. They are mothers and they are advocates, and they're sharing what life is like for them as parents dealing with racism and injustice, the conversations they're having in their families. They stay with us for this hour here on The Morning Show. Later today, the funeral of George Floyd is taking place at the Fountain of Praise Church in Houston, Texas. Floyd's killing in Minneapolis has sparked worldwide protests. Join us for live coverage from Houston Public Media as George Floyd is laid to rest in his hometown. That's today at 11 o'clock here on Wisconsin Public Radio. News is next. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our conversation continues here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. This hour, we're talking about what it's like for Black families as they deal with racism on a daily basis. Doris Strong is Director of Training and Diversity for the media organization, The Poynter Institute. She put together an open letter to newsroom managers about journalists of color. Here's part of it. She writes, "We have been in agony. We are always in agony because we cannot hide our race. Because our communities disproportionately suffer. Less pay, worse health care, redlining, food deserts, missed educational opportunities. But still, we show up. Are you listening?" Three Black women are sharing their stories as parents and as advocates this hour. And Lalaita G is one of them, founder of Black Woman Heal, a Madison-based nonprofit organization. Lalaita, you can't hide your race, and yet you still show up.
Yes. You have to keep showing up, because when you stop showing up, you lose the fight to live and to live life on your own terms. But it takes its toll on us, you know. So when we look at all that we've said about how we prepare our kids to leave home, we can't forget that this impacts us as mothers. And when you look at Black women, and this is Lisa's domain, when you look at Black women, we are on the top of the list of diabetes, heart disease, you know, all of these stress-related diseases that are a result of worrying for your children, worrying for yourself. Are you going to keep your job? You know, all of these things that we constantly have pressure about. Now even we have pressure about if you want to wear your hair natural, if you can get a job. So it's these constant micro and macro aggressions that hit us on a daily basis. And, you know, I do my Black Woman Heal work and helping Black women heal from historical trauma. But I'm also doing a lot of work with Black girls through my initiative Defending Black Girlhood, because we see, like Lisa was saying, in schools as young as kindergarten, you know, Black kids being punished, and particularly Black girls being adultified and getting the brunt of punishment that other kids are not seeing in school. And it's hard to keep your kids encouraged.
Martha from Menominee is on the line, wants to talk with us. She called 800-642-1234. Martha, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you. It's an important one, especially in Wisconsin. My heart goes out to these beautiful Black women and their voices, and I can feel their emotions through their voices. Such an important topic. This struggle can't be won without white allies in the state of Wisconsin. And as much as this is a program about Black mothers and Black children, I think that what these women are describing and what I hear is the epitome of white privilege. No white mother I know, and I'm a mother, has ever had to wake up every day of their lives and deal with this stress. Mm-hmm. No white mother has ever had to give what we call the speech to our children. And white women out there, I beg you to listen to these women and become allies. And the best people to tell you how to be an ally is Black women, because they are the mothers of these Black men that are being killed. So my heart goes out to these women. I think in Wisconsin, people think, oh, I'm not rich. I'm not privileged. What is this white privilege stuff? I'm not rich. It has nothing to do with money. It has to do with the soul of this movement. And that's my comment. And I pray for these women and their children every day.
Thank you. If I could say, I no longer want white allies. Ally has become muted. The word has become popularized, and people don't act in the way that they think it really meant. I need white warriors. That's what I need. I need white fighters who are really going to step up and help us to dismantle this system that continues to grow year after year. And when you talk to white America, no one is racist. I'm not a racist. No one's a racist. But yet and still, year after year, white parents continue to raise white children that continue the systematic oppression. And so part of response from white people is sometimes, can I tutor? Can I mentor? I need white mothers to be warriors with their children and figure out how they, year after year, child after child, keep raising children who continue this system of racism and oppression.
Yeah, the ways we've been socialized to think of race, they're deep. They take time and practice to unlearn. And that means that white people who are going to become more actively anti-racist, they need to find those resources, those classes, those books, those articles, and really actively seek them out. We should say that was Lelaita G, who's the founder of Black Woman Heal, a Madison-based nonprofit organization. We're also talking to Lisa Payton Kerr, who's the founder, CEO, and president of the Foundation for Black Women's Wellness. And Jacqueline Hunt, who we go to next, a clinical substance abuse counselor and licensed professional counselor at Foster of Dane County. Jackie, what about this relationship of motherhood that is sometimes the same among people, but also very different for Black women?
Hold on.
What's your
demand? You ask that question again.
Absolutely. I'm wondering what your perspective is when it comes to, I mean, women who are mothers are all raising children. There are some things that are going to be the same, and yet for Black families, it's a very different experience. That's just the fact.
So you said my relationship?
Yeah, because being a Black mother is inherently different than being a white mother or a mother to white children.
Mm-hmm. Well, being mother to Black children is definitely different, just simply because we have to do different things in our households and share different information with our kids to keep them safe. Lavada's comments just kind of got me thinking about a lot of stuff. So I have a lot of thoughts swimming through my head right now. And my babies, I have grandchildren as well. And so for me, my girls, and I have three granddaughters, and when I think about their innocence, and how it can just be taken away, mm-hmm. Just like, and they dance. So, like my granddaughters are like, they really love dancing just their pure innocent gesture of them dancing could put them at risk, not only, from them being young girls dancing from predators, but also being at a party. Like we had a 12-year-old who was having a birthday party, and people called the police and she was slammed to the ground and things like that. So I don't even find any of my, all of my kids need covering. And
It's just really difficult to be a parent today, especially a black mom.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just difficult to parent today as a black mom. And even more difficult to be a grandmother. So,
Lisa Payton Kerr, what about the experience of motherhood and how I hear a lot of the words like protection, that the work mm-hmm. that you're doing in raising your kids has to be protective in a way that's different than families of different color.
Yeah, and I think we've spoken to that dramatically. It's just another layer. And I want to give credence to something Laleda said. This has triple impact, you know, so we can talk about our mm-hmm. children who we bring into this world. And then we have to talk about our efforts to protect our children's lives, their very breath, right? And as we think about George Floyd calling out his mother's name, you know, and that being such a pivotal part of our experience because of the tie between black children and their mothers, their fathers too, of course, but the tie between a black child and their mother because of the deep protection mm-hmm. that the way we shield and guard our children in this world and have to build a fortress around them in the ways that we can. That layer of depth of what it takes mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically to raise our children has an impact on our health, right? So that's where the work that I do and the work that Laleda and Jackie do, it looks different, but it's the same work of how do we raise a generation of free black people, of free black children whose lives can persist while also living our own lives as free black women, free black human beings who can be well. You know, when I heard the quote that you said earlier that the young woman stated, we can't hide our race. And we live in agony. We don't want to live in agony. We don't want to hide our race. I'm not hiding my race. I don't want my race hidden. I don't want my children to have to hide their race. That language is so indicative that we're asking the wrong questions and that white supremacy, white privilege culture needs to be dismantled. Because if we live in a world where we have to say, how can I hide my race? Who in God's name can be told to hide your race in order to be safe, in order to be free, in order to enjoy liberty and justice, in order to access opportunity, you have to hide something? God didn't tell me I had to hide anything.
Right.
And so it's all wrong how we've allowed a very psychologically problematic and sick concept of supremacy of one people over another to shape even how we speak about our own freedom. And that is where we need, as you asked earlier, white warriors.
Yes. Let me pause here. This is The Morning Show. Our conversation continues here on the Ideas Network about black families in this particular time. Stay with us. We're talking with three community advocates here on The Morning Show. They are women, they are mothers, they're black, and they're speaking up against discrimination and injustice. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and I'm a white woman. I know I can't fully understand what our guests face because I don't have to live it the way that they do. I'm trying. It's our responsibility to listen to one another, to ask questions, to understand. And when we white people try to understand, we're going to mess up. It's not going to be pretty or perfect. So we need to understand what we did wrong and do better next time. If you aren't seeing injustice, you're not looking. So pay attention and listen. If you have an experience you'd like to share with us, call 800-642-1234. As we continue this conversation with three different women, we've got Laleda G here, we've got Lisa Payton Kerr, we've also got Jacqueline Hunt. And Jackie, we should address the role of trauma. You're a counselor, and we need to talk about the trauma that you see in the communities that you serve.
Yep. Wow. So here's my perspective about that. One is that first of all, black people, we have like trauma ingrained in us from ancestors, right? It's all ingrained in us already, right? Then when we experience these systems that continue to perpetuate that racism and inequalities and all those other things, people of color walk around in a constant state of PTSD because we're triggered by all kinds of things. And I'll give you a simple example of something that triggers me, and I'm processing this while I'm standing in line, is I could be standing in line in a grocery store with my cart, and a white person will come. And so say I try to give space between myself and the person that's at next going to the counter. A white person will come right up and just pull their cart up right in front of me as if I was standing there invisibly, you know, and I ask them, I'm like, excuse me, can you see me? You know, I am in line, you know, but the trauma that our kids are facing in society is exponentially greater now. One, because of social media, we get exposed to too much information way too fast. Mm-hmm. And I think for our kids, they get exposed to way too much information that they aren't able to understand or process properly. One reason being is because of their age. They don't have the capacity to do it. They haven't lived enough life to have to fill it, to be able to fill in that gray area. So they go from 0 to 100. It's either black or white. It's not it's up or down. They don't get the fill in the gray area like adults do. But we're walking around traumatized as well because we keep being flooded with these images, and we are mm-hmm. flooded with these experiences that, you know, like in every system, like you can't go to court and not see it. You can't go to the grocery store and not see it. You can't go to the doctor and not see it. Like you can't be in school and not see it. Like it's just like you can't even work in a mental health clinic and not see it. You know, it's just crazy. Like you're constantly right. at a state. And I call this, and we're tired, you know, especially I know me as a black woman, when I heard of the phenomena of racial battle fatigue, I realized I was experiencing that. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to use those white terms or whatever, because, you know, like I try to be true to who I am. But it is. I'm tired as hell of experiencing trauma all the doggone time. Traumatic experiences slap us upside our head all day, for the most part, all day, you know. And it is increasing in our community. One, and another thing I want to say about that is, one, because we've been a people that have been taught to just push through. We've been taught to just, in some cases, pray through. So we have resilience. We know how to get through a situation, right? We know when things are bad or when we're grieving or when we experience loss. We know how to manage through them. We even have some coping strategies, too, which is called sometimes substance use, over self-medicating and things like that, and other things like eating. Even some people might exercise, and that's a good thing. But we have some strategies that we use. And but we really need to embrace the fact that we are experiencing traumatic events and identify them as such.
And Leda G.
Stop just pushing.
Yes, I'm sorry, Jackie. Thanks for understanding as I stepped on you there a little bit. Leda G., it sounds like you are agreeing with a lot of what Jackie's saying.
I absolutely am. And, you know, earlier you said something about how white people have to really work to unlearn racism themselves and as they're teaching their children. And I'm just sitting here thinking, if there was a mother who didn't love her child, we wouldn't tell her to go read a book. We wouldn't tell her to go take a workshop. We would tell her to hold that child, rock that child, spend time with that child, and out of that, love will come. So we really don't need white people to unlearn racism as much as we need white people to learn love. If that officer loved George Floyd, would he have put his knee on his neck until he died? If those officers had loved Breonna Taylor, would they have busted into her home and shot and killed her? If the officers loved Atiana Jefferson, would they have shot her in her home? So it's really not difficult. It's a resistance. Because you have been taught for all kind of reasons not to love. But love is what we need, because if you love me, you will treat me right. If you love my child, you will educate my child. So we make much more complicated than it needs to be. And it's really simple, and it boils down to love.
Lisa Payton Kerr, we are quickly running out of time, and I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to leave us with your thoughts.
I wish I could be brief, and I guess I will have to be. What Laleda said is so vitally important. You know, when we hear the words, white people may not ever understand. If you love your child and the intensity that you love your child, and you translate the way you love and defend your child, do the same thing for black children. Do the same thing for black people, and you will get it right if you act out of the same sincere depth and well of love and protection and advocacy that you would attribute to your own flesh and blood. If you act in that way toward black and brown and people of other identities than yourself, you're going to get it right 99.99% of the time. The other thing I want to say for folks, because we're listening here in Wisconsin, it is critical that you understand that Wisconsin leads the nation in racial inequality by every measure: health, wealth, education, over incarceration, you name it. We are the hot spot in our 50 states. If we find the answers, the nation will follow, you know, and we have to. When we talk about health disparities and where we lead the nation for black women, men, and babies, where we have the highest black infant mortality rate, the highest rate of unstable economically, when we speak of black families, black women and men, and the historical trauma and how all of that feeds into what we're seeing and living today in our state. Once we sit down and act from a place of love and a place of justice, we change that, and we need to change that. That's a shameful history and a shameful reality for Wisconsin to carry the badge that's worse than a nation for black life and progress. That's what we want folks to leave with and to ask themselves, what will be my role as a Wisconsinite in undoing the inequalities that exist right here, not nationally, not anywhere else, right here in our state. And that's the starting point for the next conversation that we need to have.
I want to thank...
For my children's sake.
I want to thank all of you for talking to me this morning, to talking with me, to sharing your stories with the people in Wisconsin. Lisa Payton Kerr, founder of the Foundation for Black Women's Wellness, thank you.
Thank you.
Jackie Hunt, licensed professional counselor at Foster of Dane County, thanks for being here.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Laleda G., founder of the Black Women Heal Organization. Thanks, Laleda.
Thank you.
I'm Keely Boltina. This conversation has been happening on The Morning Show, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.